I'd like to call the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, July 19th meeting to order. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have six of seven council members present. It's my understanding that Councilmember Nicholson will be joining us shortly. He's in transit here to the council chambers. Mr. Standish, if you could read executive session item one and two.
Executive session item number one, pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 and A4 regarding Joplin v. Town of Oro Valley. And executive session item number two, pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 and A4 to discuss matters pertaining to an economic development agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and Town West regarding the Oro Valley Marketplace.
I move to go into the first executive session with the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorney, legal services director, the attorney from Humphrey and Peterson PC representing the municipal risk pool, and the town clerk. And joining council in the second executive session will be the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorneys, legal services director, the town clerk, an attorney from Humphrey and Peterson PC representing the municipal risk pool will be excused from the second session.
Second.
Have a second from Councilmember Green. Discussion.
Can I offer some change to the language to the motion?
Sure.
I believe Mr. Peterson represents the town and he's assigned by the municipal risk pool. Is that just for clarification and accuracy?
Okay. Correction noted, and we're welcoming Councilmember Nicholson. So we have Councilmember Nicholson. I made a motion. I'll repeat it. It was seconded by Councilmember Green. And Mr. Rothschild, I move to go into the first executive session with the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the attorney from Humphrey Peterson PC. So it says representing the municipal risk pool, but you're saying representing the town from the risk pool?
He represents the town. The municipal risk pool assigns him to the town.
Okay, so representing the town assigned from the municipal risk pool and the town clerk. And joining council in the second executive session will be the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorneys, legal services director, and the town clerk, and the attorney from Humphrey and Peterson PC representing the town assigned by the municipal risk pool will be excused. And that was seconded by Councilmember Green. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go into executive session. We'll resume regular session. I'd like to welcome everybody. We opened this session earlier, the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, July 19th, 2023. Vice Mayor just brought to my attention that we have one council member not here, so we'll wait a moment until they join us. Mr. Standish, item two.
Mr. Mayor, I believe we have to do roll call.
Thank you. Roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have seven of seven council members present. Mr. Standish, item two.
Approval of any direction to the town manager and or necessary staff as discussed in executive session regarding the draft economic development agreement with Oro Valley Lifestyle Center, LLC, Town West Realty.
Vice Mayor?
Mr. Mayor, I move to proceed as directed.
We have a second.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The July 20th Stormwater Utility Commission meeting has been canceled, and then the Board of Adjustment will be holding a special session on August 1st at 2 p.m. Right here in the Council Chambers. Then the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a special session on August 1st at 6 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Planning and Zoning Commission has a scheduled special session for August 8th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. The next Water Utility Commission meeting will be August 14th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The August 15th Budget and Finance Commission meeting has been canceled. And then the next Town Council regular session will be held September 6th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll have Mayor and Council reports this evening. Councilmember Green.
On the screen is a very handsome gentleman who recently appeared in Biz Tucson, and that was for receiving a Common Ground Award. And I just want to commend him on the work that he's done, and I appreciate having him up here, our own council member, Steve Solomon. I have one other item, and that's for those of you who are frustrated with parking at the community center. I took a shot of the KE&G people that are working there, and they are going to town. I mean, they're up when the daylight comes up, they're out there grading and putting in concrete, and they managed to get the concrete in just ahead of the monsoon the other day. So it's looking really good. I would bet that at the end of the summer, we're going to have a really nice parking lot over there. So congratulations to KE&G.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Other announcements? Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Starting a little bit early, but I'm putting out a call for Project Grad volunteers. There will be registration for school July 19th, 20th, 24th, and 27th over at CDO, and they are asking for community volunteers to please come and help them sign up. Volunteers for Project Grad, and the hours are going to be, I believe, from 2 to 4:30. You can certainly go to the website, and I'm going to encourage you to do that. And the website is cdoprojectgrad@gmail.com. Thank you.
Other announcements? I'd like to share with you that my wife and I had the opportunity to visit three of our youth camps this past week. I believe they're in their seventh or eighth week. We have camps at Steam Pump Ranch, the Community Recreation Center, and the Aquatic Center. About 202 young people are participating. We have approximately 40 staff members and a contractor. What we found were some happy young people enjoying a variety of activities. I have to applaud the Parks and Recreation staff of ensuring that these young people are kept hydrated and cool. As you know, we've had some hot days, and so they've been rotating them indoors and outdoors as part of these camps. But this is a wonderful service that's provided to families in the town of Oro Valley and beyond. With that, we'll move to the town manager's report. Mr. Wilkins.
First, I'd like to congratulate the council, the Historic Preservation Commission, as well as park staff for the ribbon cutting at the Steam Pump Ranch for the barbecue and bunkhouse restoration project. I think it was very, very impressive. Also, I'd like to congratulate Lieutenant Peterson and Sergeant Duran for their promotions, and also Officer Greg Shimara, is that pronounced right, on his retirement. So, and then just a reminder to the public, the Chamber of Commerce, their annual meeting and awards breakfast is the 26th next week. And so that's all I have right now.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. Reviewing the agenda this evening, I'd like to recommend that presentation one be moved to a future agenda item. The presenters are not able to join us this evening and ask that their presentation be moved to a future council meeting. Any objections?
I'd second that.
Okay. Okay. So we'll move that to the next. Thank you.
Not a problem.
We'll go to, but the remainder of the agenda will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience, and I do have blue cards for call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. So I'm opening call to audience at this time. When you come to the podium, if you'd please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Chris DeSimone.
Hello. My name is Christopher DeSimone. I've lived in Oro Valley since 1995. Welcome to our new town manager, Mr. Wilkins. We got some work to do, my friend. Welcome. I will tell you that now that the sad Mary Jacobs era is over in our lives, my hope is that Jeff, the staff, and the council, as I keep saying over and over again in my past 3 minutes, we have to go back to community of excellence because we're still not there. We have a way to go. Here's my top 8 things. I'll do it real quick. Now that there's a change in Parks and Rec leadership, thank goodness, can we please start taking care of our athletic fields and do crazy things like grow green grass, get rid of field potholes, and empty the trash at the damn soccer fields? These are the basics that have been failing over years. Let's stop making excuses for when things go wrong that are actually the town's fault. Go back to my buddy Alex and his dead javelina on Lambert Road that just sat there for months. And basically no one at the town wanted to take any sort of responsibility for it. We have to start being, what's happening is culturally we're turning in the Pima County and the city of Tucson of why are you bothering us and what are we doing, why are you here? And that has to stop because the responses that I got from staff were similar to ones that I used to get from the city of Tucson when talking about how their soccer fields were dangerous for my club players. You guys don't realize it because you're too close. We have to change that. Let's have a realistic economic development plan with real input from a variety of business owners and maybe some retired experts that live in this community. Let's be real about the city of Tucson down there. The growing crime problem is coming our way, and we have to make sure that Chief has what she needs to protect the Oro Valley citizens and its businesses. It is ugly down there. It is very ugly. Number 5, speaking of Tucson, don't blindly sign on to that RTA Part 2 that's being hijacked by Rahina Romero and the transit crew. Don't sign on to a wish list pot of money that doesn't actually benefit the Oro Valley citizens. I don't even think it's going to pass whatever they come up with. Number 6, speaking of Tucson, it's time to start getting our own town attorney that works on staff. No more contracting out to the old Tucson mayor's firm. We used to have our own town attorney. I don't know what happened, why we contracted out. It's got to stop. Let's have our own town attorney that works for us. Number 7, we need to start partnering more with Marana on economic development and tourism. Put the city of Tucson and the Weak Sun Corridor in your rearview mirror. Remember, I keep saying it, move. Marana Oro Valley Experience. This is the future of the region. So's Vail and maybe Sahuarita. But I'm telling you, we have to be the people that bring this rest of the region up, because they're going to drag us down. And then lastly, you guys need to do your job. You need to hold Jeff and staff accountable. I've told a few of you that you've undermanaged the previous town manager and kind of let her get away with doing her own thing, which didn't benefit the citizens, the business owners, and the kids that use the fields. So, Jeff, good luck. All of you, let's turn the page and let's make it a community of excellence. Thank you.
Mike Stange.
Thank you, Mike Sainange, Oro Valley residents. I live on Rancho Verde Drive. The three topics I'd like to discuss are the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene rezoning. I'm opposed to it. The three topics I'd like to discuss right now are the traffic, noise, and light pollution. So I was reading their proposed planning report that they submitted, and as far as the traffic goes, they were talking about average daily traffic on the existing streets like Calle Concordia, which would be my main entrance to my house, being at about 5,000 vehicles per day, and that it might go up to as high as 13,000 vehicles per day. It was a little unclear if that was what they were proposing as far as the traffic would be, or if that would be a threshold limit for a level of service, which would be a D level of service. After that, you start to... the road would fail. It's just too much traffic for that road. And so in comparison, Oracle Road itself has 33,000 vehicles average daily traffic. So Calle Concordia would have to handle one-third that amount. I don't think a smaller arterial road like that would be able to handle it. And also some of the information that they're citing is from 2012, and it's from the state of Florida. They're not even using Arizona's Department of Transportation data. As far as the noise, they're proposing an 8-foot sound wall. I know that my brother, who lives one street over, can hear me having a conversation in the backyard, and I have a 6-foot block wall with trees. We all know we live in a desert. Sound travels real good. So I don't believe that an 8-foot wall would be that helpful, and it would probably be unsightly. And then as far as the light pollution, I was taking a look at some of Oro Valley's ordinances. When I did a remodel on my house, I had a little bit of difficulty trying to just get exterior lights, you know, like a porch light and things like that on my house, and prove that there wasn't sufficient overhang so that we weren't ruining our dark skies and stuff like that. And when I looked at section 27.5 for outdoor lighting, it was saying that there needs to be glare covers or louvers installed over the lights, and that only 5% of the light could be emitted into the air to help with the dark skies. It was unclear if that 5% also included reflected light that's going to go up. And in the proposal, the church or the developer did not state what kind of lights that they were going to have. They did make mention that the lights that they were asking to put in would be 4,000 Kelvin. And when I looked at darkskies.org website, the recommendation due to health effects on wildlife and even humans was around 3,000 Kelvin. So those are my concerns. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Joanne Michelson.
Hello, my name is Joanne Michelson. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I live on Calle Buena Vista. I've read the speech to you before, but one of the things my father taught me when I was coming out of the U of A in a marketing degree is to always show up. And when I didn't get a job right away, I kept going back and asking them if they filled the job. So I want you to remember I'm still here and I still feel the same way. I am opposed to this rezoning. The proposed rezoning that has been requested by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene would be a devastating impact to our home and a community of neighbors. Traffic noise and lighting impact would be substantial. There's no greater way of proving this impact is than to have someone spend time on my street, Calle Buena Vista. To prove the impact we already endured due to the church's traffic throughout the week and the high school and the park system traffic. I invite any one of you to spend time in our neighborhood to witness this. Actually, the police department do. Our home sits on the corner of the roundabout. We have traffic from every aspect of what occurs on Kaya Concordia, church, school, aquatic center, Oro Valley maintenance facility. Along with these entities, the normal activity of the neighborhood residents in a continuous weekly travel system to get to their jobs. The plan to purchase this residential property by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene was always about rezoning it. They have not for 1 minute planned on it being used for a residence and keeping our neighborhood community intact. No adjustments to any of their proposed megastructure would change how greatly it would change this residential neighborhood and the tremendous strain on our already overloaded traffic on our neighborhood roads. I'm asking you to remember how you vote on this can determine how many other entities like Oro Valley Church and the Nazarene would consider coming into our neighborhood and changing the course of this place by buying up the residential areas with intent on getting them rezoned through the town council and rezoning committee. Zoning is there to protect us. I'm asking you to do that. I know they pulled their application at this current time. It's coming back, and we all know it. Thank you for your time.
Tricia Tozier.
Hello, my name is Tricia Tozier, and I am reading for Tim Terrace because it's his birthday today, and his grandchildren want him at their dinner. He gave a long thing here. It's about logical fallacies and inductive reasoning and deductive reasoning, and I'm just going to get to the bottom, okay? Yeah. The example of deductive reasoning is a logical approach to where you progress from your ideas. And a good example of this is the OVC, and they wish to construct a sports complex on their property. The property is zoned residential and requires a zoning change for this to happen. This neighborhood adamantly opposes the concept, but OVCN should consider a better location. Under this reasoning, common sense should dictate, and when we outgrow personal items or places or things or vehicles, we need to acquire new articles or new places or things that do fit, and OVCN does not fit. And if I have just a minute, I'm going to speak as myself. And I am saying that truth and facts have no agenda. And the truth is that the P&Z, your P&Z committee, has already said that this was not compatible with the neighborhood. And all of the neighbors have said that the truth is it doesn't work for them either. So I really would ask you not to rezone. Thank you very much for your time.
Tim Fagan.
Hi, I'm Tim Fagan. I am a resident of Oro Valley. The OVCN rezone is inactive, but not withdrawn. I'm a fourth-generation Arizonan. I was born and raised in Phoenix in an area similar to Linda Vista citrus tracts. We had outstanding mountain views to the east. It was sparsely populated, and adjacent on our south was a citrus orchard. The Arizona Canal ran behind our properties, and in previous years, my grandfather had a riding stable, and the horses drank out of the canal. In 1991, my wife and I built our house on 3.3 acres at 9510 Calle Buena Vista, which was very similar to where I grew up. I kept the stallion that I bought before he was weaned, and I earned the money by caring for 20-plus horses for several weeks. And I had ones descended from him, and I kept them until the last one died. Linda Vista Citrus Tracts was started before the founding of Oro Valley in 1974. Although it's currently probably not eligible for residential historic status in the National Historic Register, the 50-plus-year-old Shadow Mountain Estates, Oro Valley Estates, and Campo Bello are eligible. And along with Linda Vista Citrus Tracts, they formed much of the historical center of Oro Valley. The historic character of our neighborhood, the lifestyle that accompanies it, including the 50-plus horses within a half mile of OVCN, must be maintained for future generations. The OVCN rezoning and building with 70-foot lights, increased traffic and noise, must not be allowed. The sports ministry, which I support, can be built elsewhere in Oro Valley. Thank you for your time.
Anthony Ferrara.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members. My name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. If it comes before you, I encourage you to vote no on the rezoning request proposed by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. The proposed project is not compatible with the neighborhood. They purchased a residential piece of property, and it should remain as residential, zoned as residential. If they haven't done so already, I encourage them to explore other more appropriate properties that are not zoned for residential use. The project, as proposed, will do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood. I encourage you to vote no when it comes before you again. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards for call to audience, so I'll close call to audience at this time. We'll go to the next item on the agenda, which is item two of presentations.
Proclamation, Drowning Impact Awareness Month.
So I'm going to read the following proclamation. The representative for this proclamation was not able to attend the meeting tonight to accept the proclamation, but I will read it. This is in regards to Drowning Impact Awareness Month, which is the month of August. Whereas Arizona's future prosperity depends upon the long-term health, safety, and well-being of the nearly 2 million children and teens in our state, and whereas drowning is a top cause of injury and death for children and teens in Arizona, affecting not only the victims but also families, emergency personnel, and our society as a whole, and whereas a child drownings are nearly 100% preventable, and whereas research-proven strategies can save lives, including constant and capable supervision, restricting access to water, use of life jackets, swimming lessons for adults and children at the appropriate age, and rapid emergency response, including CPR. And whereas during the month of August, Drowning Prevention Coalition of Arizona, in collaboration with state and local governments, community organizations, and private citizens, will be engaging communities throughout Arizona in a coordinated and comprehensive response. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim August 2023 as Drowning Impact Awareness Month, and urge all communities and citizens of Arizona to participate in efforts to reduce drowning risk, strengthen families, and protect children and teens. Thank you. We'll go to item three.
Presentation and possible discussion regarding a Naranja Drive update related to speed study and crossing warrant results, current improvements underway, and proposed improvements in the near future.
So Town Engineer and Public Works Director, Mr. Paul Kiesler, will present this item this evening.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. I'm joined here by Commander Teachout, an incredible member of our Traffic Safety Committee. This has been a unified effort, and I just want to just go over some stuff that we talked about before and where are we going and what are we doing right now. So with that, where's the... Sorry about that. Next slide, please. Yeah. Helps if you turn it on. All right, so as I mentioned, you know, Council brought up the subject during our budget study session meetings. You know, what are we doing about Naranja, particularly with regard to recent events that happened not in the too distant past? And staff responded back. We issued you a council report in which we're looking at several things. We're looking at speed. We're looking at pedestrian accommodations. We're looking at crossings. We're looking at various aspects. So I'm not going to go over that. We all had a chance to look at that report together. I want to really concentrate on what we're doing to move forward. So let's start off with the speed study. So we did a speed study at which... we sampled. We want to make sure that we had a broad understanding of what the average speed was out on Naranja. We looked at the west side, the east side, and the center. We came up with an aggregate 85th percentile speed of 52 miles an hour. Now, 52 miles an hour really does represent a speed in which the drivers are comfortably driving, and it's within the parameters of what we consider acceptable for a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit. So the regulatory speed limit as it's set is in the opinion of the Traffic Safety Committee and in the opinion of with PD and with the town engineer is the correct speed limit. I do want to bring up that if it is being considered, because we have heard from the community, requests for lowering the speed for the lowering of the speed limit that would be contrary to the study of what we've seen. These things I just want to bring to council because, again, you are the final adjudicator on what we do as far as speed limit goes. Lowering speed does not necessarily change driver behavior. And we've had this where we had to actually raise speed limit, if we all remember Moore Road. It could create a false sense of security, particularly for people pulling out and for pedestrians walking along the side of the road, because Naranja within the section between La Cañada and First Avenue is very hilly. And as cars are braking over the rises, you want to make sure that you have a full understanding of what the expected speed limit is. Again, driver behavior, what are they going to do? With that, we're really concerned with regard to it creates the, some people abiding by it, some people not. You get a disparity of speed, you create safety issues. So if you would just keep that in mind as we move forward. Crossings. The next thing we want to look at were crossings, warrants for crossings. So we did look at a hawk warrants. The hawk warrants really required 20 pedestrians per hour crossing. Well, we don't have 20 pedestrians per hour walking up and down the street. So we're not going to meet the warrants for the hawk. However, and I want to make this point, that doesn't mean that we're going to stop looking at the warrants for the hawk. And that's because the park's not finished, so we still have to open up the park. But more importantly, and what can't be modeled, but what I have my eye on, is when we put in that big path from La Cañada over to First Avenue, that's going to create an avenue for more pedestrians. And more importantly, is that with the combined NUP that goes through the park, once the park opens, we now have a circuit. We have two circuits there that are much more inviting to pedestrians, whereas right now you're walking through kind of open desert in the park in order to get between Naranja to Tangerine and to create walking loops. So more formalized walking loops will be created, which will create the more opportunity, I believe, for pedestrians to be present. That's why we will do, at a minimum, an annual count, and we'll set up our cameras to watch and count. But the good news is, and I'm very, very happy for this, is that we do have another type of crossing, and that is the rectangular rapid flashing beacon, much like the one we have by Cañada Hills. That does meet warrant. It did meet the warrant because as we did the speed study, we found that 50% of the drivers were actually traveling over 45 miles an hour. And that wasn't a phenomenon that was happening during rush hours. That was an all-day occurrence. And again, that's because the design of the road, the slope on the road, it creates a little bit faster pace. The faster pace shortens gaps for people to be able to cross the road. So putting in some type of a warning device to warn drivers that a pedestrian is going to cross is a good safety element to have. I'm very happy that we were able to put one in down here. It's been successful. There's no incident that I'm aware of, although So we want to, as your town engineer and as the representative from the Traffic Safety Committee, we're proposing that this be implemented for the use today and for moving into the future. I want to go over a couple little things because we're actually going to look at this intersection. So FVDs, that's flexible vertical devices. We sometimes call them candlesticks. You've seen them around town. We delineate the MUP on West Lambert between the street and the MUP itself. They're not a hazard for motorists. They're not a hazard for if you run into it at a moderate pace. On the pedestrian side, there's also mumble strips, which are thermoplastic strips that we put down on the street, and that's to warn you that something's coming up. A good example of these is if you go to the corner of Shannon and Naranja, we've installed those to warn people of the impending 90-degree turn there. The other thing is an advanced pre-warning signal and putting those ahead. The more that we can light up that area and warn drivers that somebody's stepping out into the road, the better. This is all about safety and making sure that people can recognize that somebody's actually stepping out. With that, I really want to talk about the intersection itself. And again, these are the recommendations that we're bringing forward to you. Consists of several elements. Going through this, we're looking at the rectangular rapid flashing beacons right at the crossings, and those are pedestrian activated. We just spoke about the pre-warners up on both sides of the hill. And I do want to say that this right here, this representation, this is purely schematic. This is not to scale. But I just want to be able to show you what all the elements are that we're proposing out of this. Intersection mumble strips, again, to warn people coming up. The flexible vertical delineators, and that's to help create landing areas. Because we don't have a formal landing area. There's not formal MUPs right now for pedestrians to go from one from point A to point B. This will create a visual cue and direction with regard to where cars and where pedestrians should be separate from one another. And we're looking at both in the north and the south here. Moving on, other entrances that we're looking at. Many of you who travel up and down Naranja can see that we've already begun construction out there. And that's because as we were looking at the width of all the hard shoulders and soft shoulders up and down Naranja, this was the place where we had really not an accommodation for pedestrians on a hard shoulder as you walk westward or even eastward along the north side of Naranja by where the right turn into the park is. So there's the yellow portion, which is the existing archery path. And then there's the red portion that you can see. Public Works is actually self-performing this. I want to throw a shout-out to my staff. They've really done a lot of work pretty quickly here. Our goal is to have this up and operational very, very soon. We're getting close to actually paving it. So we'll have a paved path that will bring you all the way around and up to the MUP off of Muset into the park. The other things that we're doing, we're also looking with regard to the other pedestrian connectivity points as part of the park project design, which my project manager and the contractor have all been evaluating in the field. That would be connecting Copper Creek, Tangerine Terrace, and Montara Hills into the park away from Naranja. The last thing I really want to discuss here, and we haven't discussed this in the past, and that is to create what would be Oro Valley's first pedestrian safety corridor. Again, we're anticipating pedestrians for different levels using the park. I think that a safe assumption can be made that most park users themselves, right, field activities, that's a long walk for them. You'd be gassed out by the time you got up there. But there are still going to be a lot of pedestrians in the area. And again, I want to emphasize with the creation of the new path in which we received the grant for, that's inviting pedestrians into the area. So with pedestrians in the area, creating a safety corridor from La Cañada to First Avenue, it helps with that driver awareness and the helping the expectation that pedestrians are out there. Because we do have one crosswalk that connects Masters Hill over to Copper Creek, where that's an unsignalized, it's just a high visibility crosswalk. We're looking at putting a sign up that has your speed is, and that it would flash slow down when you're going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. Set 4 signs in each direction so that you were really getting the point across. These are solar installations, so they're fast and easy. And what you can see here is I took one of the City of Tucson's pedestrian corridor signs and actually modified it a little bit, put that your speed sign is on top of it. But it is an industry standard that you use when you do experience pedestrians. And although Oro Valley does have its fair share of pedestrians, we do have a good MUP system. We just do not have a good MUP system out here yet. That's coming. The other thing I wanted to talk about was consider a town code modification, much like we do in construction zones, that if you are speeding, fines could be 2 times. Again, that's something for council to think about, and we could bring this back and talk about that at a later date if that's your desire. The other last piece that I want to talk about on the safety corridor is the installation of rumble strips. Now, I talked about mumble strips. Rumble strips are a little bit different. These are to help people stay in the lane. It's a sound warning. It's a tactile warning if you're kind of wandering off your lane in a vehicle. Also, separating bicyclists from staying on that line and keeping them at that proper 3-foot separation where we can. With that, I know I kind of talked a little quickly. I want to say thank you for the opportunity of bringing this forward and being able to present this evening. We have several near-term measures that we are working on. We've discussed this at the Traffic Safety Committee where we're in lockstep. Commander Teachout. Anything else?
Nothing. If they have questions for me, I'll certainly answer.
Yeah. We anticipate coming to council in the fall, so we're going to need to design all of this, but we'll need to fund it. And, roughly just looking at Paul's thumbnail here, 100 to maybe 150,000 for the improvements that we're talking about. So that would be a CIP that I would need authorized by council, so we would bring that forward to you. And we're looking forward to just helping create additional safety measures in the corridor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Commander Teachout, and open it to questions. Councilmember Green.
It's a pretty amazing response in a very short time. I would commend both you, Paul, and also Officer Teachout. It looks like you've done about as much as you can possibly do. I think the speed study is really important because people just are not going to go 25 miles an hour there. No. And the construction is made so it can go faster. So the rumble strips, the mumble strips, the side guards, I think that's all terrific. And I want to commend you both on working on this.
Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much, Mr. Kiesler, also Officer Teachout, for all the work that you've done here. I'm very impressed with it. I think it will be effective. When you say near-term completion of some of these projects, what is the time frame of near-term?
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, that's a great question. So we need to now, if this is our path forward, we need to now sit down and go through the nuts and bolts and do all the actual engineering detail. We'll put all that detail together, and then from there we'll get what the cost will be for all of that. I'll put it all together in a package and then bring it forward to council, hopefully early fall.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your prompt and quick work on this. I think it's always good to make our roadways safer in any way that we're able to do that. One concern that I have is the designation of a pedestrian corridor. I wonder if there might be a way to reword that. I like the idea of fines doubled in certain areas, but as a lay person, if I were to see something designated as a pedestrian corridor, I might think that's an ideal place for pedestrian activity. And, we do have some other places, like with multi-use paths, et cetera, that are maybe ideal for pedestrian activity, whereas this one we're working towards getting to that point,
right?
Which I think has always been a focus ever since the Parks and Rec master planning discussion when the mayor asked for a connectivity analysis and took a look at the paths coming through, and the path from the park onto La Cañada was approved as part of the initial expansion of the park. So it's always been a focus to try and increase that pedestrian connectivity in this area. So that would be my only thought, is I don't know if there's maybe a different name where instead of saying, this is a great designated pedestrian corridor, if there's another way to say fines doubled. in this area for pedestrian safety or something.
Sure, Mayor, Vice Mayor. We want to stick with an industry standard that everybody knows. And the pedestrian corridor is an industry standard, but so would be a safety corridor. And you know, let us talk about that amongst ourselves, and then I can certainly get back through with the town manager and consider that as well.
Okay, I certainly understand that. We do have, I don't know if we would go and make all of our great places for pedestrians, pedestrian corridors, or what the standard would be. So thank you. I appreciate you being willing to consider that, and I really appreciate your work on this. I know all of us really like to see improvements in our roadway safety and protecting our citizens. Thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I wanted to agree with everyone else. Thanks for doing this so quickly, and thank you, Mr. Kiesler and Teach Out, for working and getting this done very quickly. And I do agree that the double of fines, we do it for roadway workers, we may as well do it for our children and our citizens. And I think, too, like whenever you see fines doubled, like as a normal driver, you think, oh, there must be a cop out here watching me they want to get me for the double fine. So I think that just even having the double fines out there makes people feel like there's more of a police presence out there, even though if you don't have to have an officer initially out there. But I am supportive of that, and thanks for all the suggestions you put in there, and I think that's great.
Councilmember Bowen.
And thank you, Mr. Kiesler and Commander Teachout. I, too, appreciate the work, the detailed work that's done here, particularly in the area right around the entrance to Naranja Park. But there's also another issue I'd like to ask. Are we still on schedule regarding the multi-use path? Because I see potential safety issues on Naranja all the way down to First and all the way up to La Cañada. How are we doing there?
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, those are good questions. So we have a couple different fronts. So your first question was with regard to the big MUP. So yes, we are on schedule with that. We've already had our first design meetings. We had a first design kickoff on that with ADOT, and they are moving forward where we set the parameters of what we're looking for out of this project. So that milestone has been met, and that's moving forward. So I'm very thankful that we are on schedule with that. The other thing is that in the council report that I issued on June 5th, I believe, was I talked about maybe some accommodations on the south side where we have those pinch points. We're still working on those. So I want to get, you know, some type of design together, and then, of course, working with the town manager and the assistant town manager of coming up with a package and seeing if that's something that is plausible within the confines of this budget, or to be something that we propose in a future budget.
Thank you. That was my question.
Councilmember Green?
For Commander Teachout, does doubling of fines really have an effect or not? What's your opinion on that?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Green, you know, I don't have any statistical data to suggest that that's the case. I know historically, so there is a provision in state law where during road work that you can have fines double in construction zones. It's been a long time since I've seen us use those signs. Back in the day when I was young motor cop, I know that every now and again we used to write it for the really egregious violations. But I honestly can't point to that there's any statistically valid reason for it. But if it creates some visual alertness, as Councilmember Nicholson was saying, that, hey, we might do business a little differently around here as an additional detractor, then I would suggest that that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. But I don't have any data to suggest that fines doubling really curbs driving behavior.
So it'd be an attention getter.
Just an attention getter between that and the flashing speed signs, and we really do take a trifecta approach to this between education, engineering, and enforcement, right? So the education piece could be the signs, right? And press releases and community outreach, and then of course enforcement from us, and then the engineering measures that Mr. Kiesler and his staff have put together.
Commander Teachout, could you you mentioned about enforcement being part of that trifecta? The speed study seems to indicate that we do have a number of individuals that are exceeding the 45 miles per hour posted speed limit. Can you just speak to enforcement on Naranja between La Cañada and First Avenue?
Mr. Mayor, certainly I'll answer for that. you know, because we have people that speed doesn't necessarily mean we have a speeding problem. They actually do kind of exist separately. So you do have folks that are exceeding the speed limit, but when we've done speed studies in the past, we're looking at those outliers that really are, you know, 10, 15 miles an hour over that are creating the serious public safety issues. But I will tell you, since January of 2023, I went and I pulled the data to see what it was that we were doing out there, right? What the motorists are doing and what we were doing about it. And since January till present day, today, as a matter of fact, is when the data was pulled, we've done 183 traffic stops. And for those that think we write a lot of tickets, we've only written 18 on that stretch of road. And the road that stretch that I'm talking about is Naranja between La Cañada and First Avenue. So philosophically, we think that sometimes police cars on the side of the road, lights flashing, is a better deterrent than taking people's money all the time. So when you have 18 traffic citations over the course of 7 months, and we conducted 183 traffic stops, clearly that's speaking more to the thought process of education, community outreach, having conversations with people roadside. And, you know, and during that time, we've only had, I say only, let me retract that, we've had 3 crashes. One being the St. Patrick's Day and the other 2 being non-injury. So it is not an area that has a high proclivity towards crashes, but it is a straight line and it is something that can invite people going over the posted speed limit.
So about one stop a day from January to now approximately?
Yes, sir. And I can't tell you what time of days those are, but I could get back to you on that if you wanted that. It's about average. Just, and how that rates in compared to others.
That's my next question.
Sure. I would just be guessing, right? But I will tell you that there is certainly, I mean, it also doesn't hurt that it's geographically located right in the backyard of the police department. So our police cars are on that road with a greater frequency than maybe some other roads, which might increase some of our presence, which might increase some of our activity as well. So how does it rate in comparison to, say, Oracle Road? I can't give you that, but I know that Oracle Road, when you have hot spots, we're going to put certainly more traffic stops out there when you're talking 55,000 plus cars a day.
Other questions, Council? I want to join the Council in expressing my appreciation to you, Mr. Kiesler, and to the Traffic Safety Committee for the work that you've done, for the recommendations that you've brought forward. I appreciate the fact that you've taken this at a very professional level in terms of these studies and so forth. So thank you very much. And we look forward to you coming back, and I'm sure you'll have a supportive council to fund those improvements. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Next item is the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to the regular agenda, item 3, Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, pursuant to ARS section 9-471, discussion regarding the annexation of 36 acres at the southwest corner of La Cañada Drive and Westmore Road.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Management analyst, Mr. Carl Shattuck, will present this item. He'll be followed by Mr. Paul Olin with Paradigm Land Design, LLC. That will also speak to this item in behalf of the applicant, Mr. Shattuck.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Town Council. Thanks for having me this evening. My name is Carl Shattuck. I'm a management analyst with the Town of Oro Valley within the Town Manager's Office. I also serve as the Town's Annexation Coordinator. This evening, I will be presenting the first public hearing, as required by state law, for an annexation application received by the Town of Oro Valley. No action or decision is called for tonight. It's an opportunity to discuss, receive comments, and identify any questions that need answering. I have a short presentation that provides an overview of the annexation application received by the town. Then Paul Oland of Paradigm Land and Mike Jones of Insight Homes will expand on the annexation request with their own presentations. Annexation is the legal process by which a local government expands its jurisdictional boundaries to incorporate neighboring unincorporated areas. Annexation in Arizona is governed by state statutes, and these state statutes outline procedures, criteria, requirements that local governments must follow when considering the annexation of new areas. This legal framework ensures that the process is conducted transparently with public input. This evening's agenda topic is one of those procedures required by state law, It's the first public hearing to discuss a requested annexation of approximately 36 acres at the southwest corner of Westmore Road and La Cañada Drive. The input from tonight will help us better understand the concerns, preferences, and values of council, neighbors, and residents overall, allowing for an informed choice when the time comes to decide on whether to annex this property. Before that time comes, council will be provided with a fiscal impact analysis and an analysis of general plan provisions for the property. From a high level, the territory being discussed this evening meets the basic standards for annexation. The property is located in unincorporated Pima County and is within the town's general plan planning area boundaries. The property under consideration meets all key provisions in state law for annexation into Town of Oro Valley. The property is a relatively small parcel within a section of territory categorized as priority area 4 long-term within the town's annexation strategy. And this annexation application is only for translational zoning. The property currently has a zoning of suburban ranch within Pima County. Translational zoning for the town of Oro Valley would be R1-144, and under translational zoning, approximately 10 single-family residential houses would be allowed. The applicant does have hopes to seek a rezoning that would allow around 34 residential homes. However, that would be a separate process that, if pursued, would occur after completion of the annexation process and follow the normal rezoning process and public input procedures established by the town. On June 28, 2023, staff filed a blank annexation petition, accurate map, and legal description of the property with the Pima County Recorder. This was required after the town received an official application for annexation by representatives of the property owner. Since the town received this annexation application, we must process and consider it. Two public hearings are required by state law. This is the first public hearing in which town council will have the opportunity to review, discuss, and hear public comments. A second public hearing will be held in which town council will decide on whether to annex the property. The second public hearing is tentatively planned to occur during a regularly scheduled town council meeting sometime this fall. Again, no action is required at the conclusion of this public hearing. However, council can direct staff to look into certain areas of interest and return with answers before the second public hearing. As mentioned, the property under consideration meets all key provisions in state law for annexation. There are three key provisions in state law: contiguity, size and shape, and unincorporated area requirements. Contiguity, the property adjoins the boundary of the town for over 3,600 feet and is surrounded by the town on three sides. Size and shape, the property under consideration is essentially a square with a diameter of over 1,200 feet and again is surrounded by the town on three sides. And unincorporated, the property is currently unincorporated territory within Pima County, and annexation would not create an unincorporated island. Listed in the slide are key provisions within the town's annexation strategy that particularly apply to an infill property with a single supportive owner, as we are discussing this evening. Within the town council's adopted annexation strategy, the property under consideration is a parcel within a priority area 4 for long-term annexation. The annexation strategy does allow for priority designations. The annexation strategy allows that priority designations do not preclude the opportunity to annex properties lower on the priority scale out of order if there is strong interest on the part of the property owners or the elected body. The property under consideration is within the town's planning area as defined within the adopted Town of Oro Valley General Plan. The land use map in the town's general plan designates the subject property as low-density residential, consistent with translational zoning. And for the second public hearing, staff will prepare a comprehensive assessment of the annexation in relation to the town's general plan.
Mr. Shattuck, I'm going to ask you, if I could ask the audience to not have conversations during the presentation, I would appreciate it. If you want to have a conversation, you're certainly welcome to go outside. Thank you.
This annexation application is for translational zoning. Translational zoning is a transfer of existing county zoning and associated rights into the Town of Oro Valley equivalent. So the property is currently zoned suburban ranch by Pima County, which is a residential zone with a minimum lot size of 144,000 square feet. Equitable Town of Oro Valley zoning would be R1-144, a residential zone with a similar lot size requirement. For development to occur, if annexed, the owner would have to follow the town's development review procedures. A significant wash and trail alignment run through the center of the property. Annexing into the town will subject the property to the town's riparian habitat overlay district standard, which would ensure conservation of the wash. The potentials for cultural resources would be studied and addressed if applicable as a pre-development requirement. And additionally, if the property is developed within the town, it would be subject to permit fees, impact fees, and construction sales tax, along with utility and retail sales tax. Provision of services to the property would be relatively simple given it's an infill property. Extensive infrastructure and public services are already in close proximity to the property, minimizing the cost of providing them to future residents. The property is currently vacant. However, given the density of development surrounding the property, development could occur in the future. Annexation of the property would provide the town and its residents the opportunity to control urban growth using the town's development standards. Annexation of vacant lands allows the town to manage the plan review, permitting, and development process. From our water utilities perspective, annexing this property prior to development would offer benefits. If the parcel stays in unincorporated Pima County under their current zoning of 10 homes allowable, they could drill and permit for 10 30-gallon per minute wells. Having the equivalent of a 350-gallon per minute well tapping into the same aquifer as the town would be bad for the water utility and the aquifer. However, the location of the parcel is well positioned to be served by the independent Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System infrastructure we are building now, which utilizes cap water. Since the town received the annexation application, we must process and consider the application. The purpose tonight is to review and discuss the annexation application during a public hearing as required by state law. Town Council will have the opportunity to decide on the annexation application during the second public hearing tentatively scheduled for this fall. Before then, a fiscal impact analysis and analysis of general plan provisions will be provided to Council, as well as any issues or concerns that may come up during this discussion this evening. I'm now going to hand it over to Paul Oland of Paradigm Land.
Welcome, Mr. Oland.
Thank you, sir. Paul Oland with Paradigm Land, representing the property owner and developer Insight Homes. And as Mr. Shattuck mentioned, I have Mike Jones here with me. He's the president of Insight Homes. He's going to get up and say a few words here in a minute. I won't take long. Just wanted to take a moment and say Insight Homes here has been doing business here for a long time in the Tucson region. These are some of the quality subdivisions they've built in. Some of them are in Oro Valley, and Mike will talk a little bit more about this. In terms of the conformance with goals and guidelines, that's all in your packet, and Mr. Shattuck actually went through a lot of this stuff, so I'm not going to repeat that. It's the same information here, but we do I think strongly meet the goals and guidelines within the annexation strategy here. In terms of being generally consistent with the goals and policies of the general plan, I do have slides analyzing all of the applicable policies in the general plan if you all are interested in that, but I won't get into that unless you guys actually want to do that tonight. And then in terms of our vision for the property, Mr. Shattuck mentioned that the vision is to come back should this annexation be approved and construct a neighborhood very much like La Cañada Ridge, which Insight Homes also did directly to the south. So a low density in conformance with the general plan, one home per acre, no more than that. So custom homes and... this is all a lot of repeat, so I apologize for that. But I'll go ahead and just get Mike up here, and he can say a few words about Insight Homes.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mike Jones. I am the I'm a custom home builder and the owner of Insight Homes. I started my company in 1980 by building custom homes in the Catalina foothills, and I started building in Oro Valley in 1988. In 1989, I moved to Oro Valley with my wife Ann, my children, Jessica and Matthew, who were at the time 4 and 2 years old, so I am a long-term resident of Oro Valley. Today, My wife, Ann, is our decorator and helps every one of our customers with the design of their homes. My son, Matt, works with me in the business. Our goal with this property, if we are successful, is to build a community similar to the community we built just to the south, La Cañada Hills. And if you have any questions, please stop me. I've got a number of, and I'll be quick, the homes that we've built in the past, just an example of what we do. And again, stop me if you want to buy something. All of our homes are, you know, southwest, contemporary, and single story, and are low profile. Looks like you've been through it. So that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
And we've, Mike flipped through them, but we've also got some very sparkling customer testimonials if you want to read those. But I think you all have had a copy of this PowerPoint as well. And again, I've got general plan policy conformance analysis if you want to go through that, but I'll leave that up to you. And certainly if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, comments that we can look into before we come back before you, I would certainly appreciate that kind of feedback.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olin. Mr. Shattuck, were you coming back to the...
Just to help facilitate the discussion.
Okay. So there is a public hearing that's associated with this agenda item. I am going to open the public hearing at this time. If you would like to speak to this agenda topic, you want to fill out a blue card and give it to the town clerk. And while the public hearing is open, I'm going to consult with the town clerk for just a moment. Okay, I have no blue cards for this public hearing, so I'm going to... Okay, so there's some confusion. I looked at your notes, and it looked to me like you wanted to speak to item 4, which is the development at Naranja and La Cañada. No, you want to speak to this one? Okay, it is 3, but just with your... Okay, so I will remain... The public hearing will remain open, and Kelly Headley...
I just had a couple of questions. I actually did not come prepared like everybody else. So my question is that you said that they were going to be singular story and they were going to be 1-acre lots. The pushback, the setback from my property line on Zircon Lane, which is right behind that, I'd like to know how far that is and whether or not that's going to actually impede on my view of, you know, I bought the property up there. I don't know if you guys have if you guys are going to be building on the decline or if you're going to build up or if it's going to stay down in the area.
If you'll ask the question, so we'll once we close the public hearing, we'll ask the questions that you've just asked to the applicant and his representative. So as I understand it, you have a question about the height of the buildings. Will they be single story?
Yes, and whether or not I can actually request it, there being a restriction on height and how far the setback.
So clarification on setback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And is there any way that I can get the printouts for what was presented tonight?
It's on our website. Is that correct?
Yeah. It is.
So you can go to the website. And,
okay. Uh-huh. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Headley. Okay, my apologies. Anyone else that wants to speak to this particular agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. If you want to speak, if you'll fill out a blue card, they're in the back of the room, and I'll keep the public hearing open while you do that.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
If it's appropriate, I know we actually have a public hearing opening, but I'd like to ask the town attorney, is this a time that we could even discuss things such as height limits and setbacks other than those that are prescribed by the current and transitional zoning?
You can discuss it. There can't be any action taken on it.
Yeah, if you could bring him to Ms. Stein. Thank you. Okay, so T, Brandon,
Michelle.
Okay. And if you would state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Hello, my name is Brandon Michelle. First name's Timothy. Yes, I'm a resident. I live right next to where you guys are going to build, actually. And guys, speaking to all of you, please annex this property. Currently, it's being used for semis to park and work on their vehicles, and it's driving me through the roof. I've called these officers multiple times to complain, and these guys are lying through their teeth and using this property for dumping stuff, and it's just, it's awful. These guys build great homes. I know y'all are going to do your job, but as far as a local resident, I would strongly encourage this. The only thing I would ask, I'm a landscaper, and I live right there, and my kids hike and wander around that little wash that comes down through there. If you guys wouldn't mind, when you're designing this, please keep that thing active. We've seen bobcat, mountain lion, deer. It's gorgeous, and a lot of homes crushing that down, I think, would ruin some of the aesthetic of our beautiful town. Well, we love living here. So, anyways, that's my two cents. Thanks, you guys.
Steve Stubner.
Hello, my name is Steve Stubner. I've been living in Oro Valley for 23 years. I used to live in Coyote Ridge, and now I'm in Lackinata Ridge. With Mike Jones had done my home. Insight does a very good job on homes, and I'd be very supportive of this whole thing. The one thing question I have is, where would be the ingress or egress to get in there? Is it be Moore Road or Lackinata to get into the new 36 acres? Anyone answer that?
Well, we'll ask the questions.
Okay. So, yeah, that would be the question.
Okay.
So that's the concern, but, you know, overall, I'm very favorable for this thing. Like he says, there's just trucks parked out there now, and we don't want to have another storage unit in that corner or a gas station or that kind of stuff. So this would be perfect. It'll fit right in with our Lackinata Ridge. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, anyone else that would like to speak to this agenda item? Seeing no one making a move for the back room, I'm going to close the public hearing and open this to council questions and discussion. Okay, so some of the questions that were asked, so could you speak to the height of buildings?
Mayor, members of the council, as you're aware, there is not a development proposal before us this evening, nor a specific tie to a building height. I do want to add, though, that by annexing and potentially moving from Pima County suburban ranch zoning, where the maximum building height is 34 feet, the comparable zone in Oro Valley, which is R144, has an 18-foot height limit. So if there are any questions specific to what the product these gentlemen build, I certainly would defer to them.
Yeah. So could you speak to the product and the height of the product?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as Mr. Vella mentioned, we're knowingly requesting this annexation. Eyes wide open that we're going from a 34-foot building height maximum to an 18-foot building height maximum as part of the translation, and that's totally fine. Mike builds single-story homes, as you can see, and that works perfectly for his vision for the property. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Vella, you may want to speak to setbacks.
Uh, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, in comparing the two zoning districts, so Pima County Suburban Ranch, the front and rear setbacks are 50 feet, side yard 10 feet. Oro Valley, comparable R1 44 zoning, would be the same front and rear, but the side yard setbacks are 20 feet, so they're greater than Pima County.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Vice Mayor.
I won't ask all my questions, but I just want to ask a follow-up to that. If this property were concurrently rezoned so that it could accommodate the proposed development with one-acre lots, what would the setbacks for that proposed rezoning potentially be?
So if it's, I'm not sure which district they would be pursuing, because again, we don't have an applicant, a development application before us. Assuming it's R143, which is a 40 minimum lot size of 43,000 square feet. I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, but I can look them up real quick. So give me a moment.
Okay,
if
someone
else
wants
to
ask
a question,
we'll ask some additional
I'll circle
questions.
Back.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Mr. Villa. Councilmember Green.
I know we don't have a plan before us, but I would follow up on the gentleman's question back there. Where do you envision the ingress and egress from this to be?
That would be off of La Cañada. Yes. Yes, sir. Okay.
And then there was also a question, Mr. Bell, you may want to remain at the podium, or Mr. Olin. There was a question about wash preservation or open space preservation.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. So the Environmentally Sensitive Lands Ordinance map currently has a critical resource area that comes in from the top and then dead ends in this void and then comes out the bottom. So part of the requirement is that we have a biologist that's on the town's list go in and actually delineate where the critical resource area should be mapped within this property. So we've actually done that already, and it looks just like a continuation of what's to the north and south. So that'll be treated just like the CRAs everywhere else. It's got a 95% open space requirement, which we've been playing around with site plans, but you know we will need to cross it once with a road, and I think that'll pretty much take care of that 5% allowance for disturbance. But other than that, we're going to leave that entirely alone. There's also a trail alignment number 325 that runs up through the wash, and we'll be preserving that and actually connecting to it. We're thinking that a picnic area, trailheady kind of thing somewhere in there. We're still playing around with that idea. But
so since you mentioned that, Mr. Olin, that was a question that I had. I read in your report about that. So the trail easement, I think I referred to it as a trail easement. Would that trail easement be with the town, or who would receive that easement?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. So right now there is no easement. There's just an alignment on the map. But as part of the development, we would grant a public trail easement, non-motorized, I think is the term. Yeah. Just standard trail easement language. So that would be granted with the plat.
And so I looked at the town's trail system map, and it shows a trail to the north and to the south. Are those segments of the trail in place? And so this is a gap of that trail?
Mr. Mayor, I think it physically versus functionally. I think there's plenty of people who walk it today. It's just not within an easement, so it'll be protected.
Walk it on this property, but off of this property to the north and to the south, it's showing, is that trail in place and it's being used? And so theoretically, this is a gap that would be, yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Other questions, Vice Mayor?
Okay, I understand that we're talking about just the annexation in this instance, but what does the timeline looking forward look like? Would you be seeking translational zoning and then in the same process going through the rezoning so that at the moment of annexation, the citizens can kind of ask those type of questions that they've been asking tonight?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. Our thought was that we would do the annexation first just because it's a quicker process, and then we would, you know, obviously wouldn't get the rezoning. And I understand that we can't really get into site plan details at the annexation level. But what we're trying to do is cast a vision. We don't have an objection to doing it that way, to running them concurrently. We just figured that since the annexation is kind of quicker, we could check that off while we're working on the rest of the stuff. But I'm not sure if there's a preference.
I mean, I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but I kind of like for the citizens to have some, you know, well, I don't know.
Voice?
Yeah, some idea of kind of what it would end up being, because we know that even though the annexation would be on translational zoning, kind of puts us in a strange position where we know the ending zoning won't be the R144 most likely, just because there's another idea being presented at the same time. So,
sure. So I guess just speaking to that real quickly, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, I mean, we know full well we need to go through the whole rezoning process with neighborhood meetings and public hearings and all that other stuff. So certainly, I guess in my mind, there would be a lot of input opportunity there that would help shape the plan.
Okay, thank you. And I did want to comment on the truck parking and ask the staff to speak to that, because that was also one of my questions that I had about that. And one of my questions was, if we annex this property, will we control that right-of-way section? Where currently we have regular truck parking.
Your mic's not functioning.
There we go.
Now it is.
So, Mayor, Vice Mayor, if we do annex this, then yes, we are required to take over the right-of-way that's adjacent. Now, we already have a portion of that right-of-way already on Moore and La Cunha. So we already have those portions of right-of-way.
We already control the portion of the right-of-way where the trucks are parking?
Well, I believe the trucks are parking off the right-of-way, and that's what the issue is.
Okay, so that section is part of this annexation, so then we would be able to address that issue in the event that we annex this property.
That's not correct? That could be. I'll have to pass that to others who are expert in that particular field. Zoning enforcement.
That would be an issue, if I may, Mayor. That would be jointly enforced by zoning code enforcement as well as OVPD.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I feel that the public would consider that an overall benefit to annexing this property. So, okay. I think that's all my questions. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Sorry, Councilmember Solomon.
Right. So, my understanding currently, this property is in Pima County, correct? So, trucks parking on our property are under the jurisdiction of Pima County, not necessarily OVPD, particularly if it comes to a civil matter. One of the benefits of annexing this property is it's now part of the town of Oro Valley. Also remind my fellow council people that this is zoned, ready to be built with a 34-foot height limit for 10 single-family homes in Pima County SR-144 zoning with private wells, if I'm correct, which tie into our aquifer. So the water's going to come from Oro Valley, potentially one way or the other. Once again, this is just the annexation. This is not a development plan. It's not a site plan. They're not asking for rezoning of heights. They're not talking about changing property setbacks. So I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I don't even think it's appropriate for us to be asking about what type of home they want to build or they are going to build. If they're annexed in, they're annexed in under our zoning law, which says the specifics of how it can be developed, unless they want to come in for rezoning. So I think it makes obviously a lot of sense to annex.
Keep in mind, any infrastructure needed will be 100% borne by the private property owner and developer. Not a dime of taxpayer dollars will go into this project. However, the town, that's actually how it is with all projects. The developer and property owner pays for all on-site and off-site improvements needed for that property. The town will receive construction sales tax. It will receive impact fees. And then as the paradigm had shifted now, since COVID and with online shopping and food deliveries, each residential unit will probably be generating a good amount of sales tax to the town of Oro Valley for any type of online purchases that are done from that property. So there's really no downside, particularly since right now, if they were to go through Pima County, it'd be Pima County design guidelines and development standards that would be followed, not Oro Valley. Yet all the residents there would obviously be driving right onto Oro Valley streets. So this gives us control, gives the Oro Valley lighting ordinance requirements. So I just don't see any downside to this.
Other questions, discussion? Okay, all right. There's no decision with this, or no action will be taken on this item tonight. So we thank you, Mr. Shattuck, Mr. Olin, Mr. Bell. We appreciate your presentation this evening, taking the questions. Ideally, this has provided you with some direction as you had hoped for. Yeah, okay, very good. I think we'll take a 10-minute break before continuing with the regular agenda. So we'll resume at about 7:45. We're going to resume the regular session. If you could please close your conversations, and we'll begin with item 4. Mr. Standish, item 4 of the regular session.
Continued public hearing, discussion and possible action on 3 items related to a proposed office and drive-through development located on the northwest corner of Naranja and La Cañada Drive. The items include item A, reconsideration of a 2006 grading exception condition, item B, conceptual site and landscape plans, and item C, conceptual architecture.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Principal Planner Michael Spaeth will present this item, and he'll be followed by Mr. Paul Olin with Paradigm Land Designs, LLC, that will speak in behalf of the applicant. Mr. Spaeth.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor, Council members, members of the audience. My name is Michael Spaeth, Principal Planner with the Town of Oro Valley. The purpose for this item, as Mr. Standish read, is design review following the conceptual use permit, or conditional use permit, approval of the drive-through back in February by Town Council. Conditional use approval means the drive-through component and associated design has been approved. I'd just like to remind Council of that. So tonight's discussion is for the 3 items continued during the public hearing in March related to the commercial development on the northwest corner of La Cañada and Naranja. The first item A is an amendment to a grading exception that I would like to point out is a discretionary ask of Council. The second item is a conceptual site and landscape plan, and item C is an architectural proposal. Items B and C are ministerial in nature. I would like to present these this evening for discussion and possible action. So just to orient everyone with respect to the property, it is approximately 2.8 acres in size and is located on the northwest corner of La Cañada and Naranja, outlined in here in yellow on the image on the screen, and is immediately north of the shopping center that includes Brugger's Bagels. Item A, again an amendment of the grading exception conditions, is to consider a proposed amendment to that 2006 grading exception to remove the additional buffer yard and screen wall requirements that were part of that approval. The applicant's design has strategically placed the office buildings to help screen the site's commercial activities from neighboring properties and meets code-required buffer yard and screen wall requirements. As such, these conditions are unnecessary. Lastly, there have also been some conditions included in your packet in Attachment 1 that allows regular maintenance of the existing drainage channels to the north and west to maintain its functionality, but the existing vegetation in that channel has to be maintained to make sure that visual barrier remains between the property and neighbors to the north and west. Items B and C, as I mentioned before, are the site design and architecture for the center. The applicant, again, has worked with staff in revising the site design to improve compatibility with the surrounding area, specifically, as I mentioned earlier, strategic placement of the commercial buildings to screen that activity from neighbors, limits on no back-of-house activities. The drive-through has been located nearest the intersection as far away from neighbors as possible. And again, buffer yards and screen walls have been incorporated into the design. Item C, the architecture, as you can see, is consistent with all code requirements and includes varied roof and wall planes, different textures, colors, and materials, and parapet walls to screen rooftop mechanical equipment. It is worth pointing out that the architecture is just for the office buildings. This does not include architecture for the future drive-through use. When we do know who that user is, should this be approved tonight, the architecture will set the stage for what that future architecture has to be consistent with within the center to be cohesive. Since the meeting in March, the applicant has revised the site design slightly to address some traffic concerns that came up during that meeting. As you can see by the graphics on the screen, the original site design on the left-hand side of the image shows the original location for the ingress and egress off of Naranja Drive. You can see it's been shifted westward, approximately 90 feet further away from the intersection. That really does two things. It not only separates traffic leaving the site from that intersection traffic, but also provides increased capacity in the right-hand turn lane there entering the site. The applicant is here, of course, to provide greater detail on their revisions. The Planning and Zoning Commission considered the applicant's requests in January in conjunction with the associated conditional use permit application for the drive-through. The commission recommended approval of item A, the grading exception, and denial of items B and C, though recommendations for denial of items B and C were to be consistent with the commission's corresponding recommendation for denial of the CUP, just by way of background, not necessarily based on site design concerns. Town Council, again, did conditionally approve the associated CUP for the drive-through use in February and continued these three items at a meeting in March. So to summarize, the applicant's proposals have been reviewed for conformance with the El Conquistador Country Club PAD, as well as all applicable zoning code and general plan criteria. The Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended approval of item A and denial of items B and C. And again, these were continued from our discussion in March at the public hearing. These are presented for discussion and possible action this evening. And I would just like to remind the council, three separate motions are required, one for each item. And approval of item A is required to be able to approve items B and C as proposed before you this evening. Thank you, Mayor. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. Mr. Olin.
Thank you, sir. Paul Oland with Paradigm Land, representing the property owner who is also the developer in this case. And it's Bob Schwartz who's here with me. And he'd like to take a minute or two and talk about the architecture when I get to that point. So Mr. Spaeth actually has a beautiful slide here that had both site plans on it, which I should have done. But just to point to where we were back in March, the primary concern was about the distance there from the access point on Naranja over the intersection. The suggestion was made, and it was a good one, to push that as far west as possible, given the constraints, and also to back that up with some traffic data that supports the turn lane length,
and the location. So we've been busy in the last few months. A couple of things we've done. So just the pinch point here. Obviously we've got a wash that runs along here, and there's a small floodplain associated with that, and there is some bank protection. We've also got a large cluster of utility boxes right here. I think every utility in the Tucson area has a box there. So it's amazingly congested there, but to dig into that little part there would really be a nightmare. So the stars aligned here, and I have to admit that the suggestions that we got from this body and from the town engineer to just take another hard look at where that entrance is and push it further west, that was a good suggestion. Despite any grumbling that I may have done at the time. So where we ended up here was, as I said, the stars kind of aligned. We've got Marcos Esparza he's our traffic engineer, and he's here to talk about the traffic. But in a nutshell, we looked at the speed data, and that translates into a minimum turn lane distance. And I'll let him get into that. Actually, why don't you come up here, Marcos, and just talk for 60 seconds about all the traffic work we've done.
Get my time out.
Yes.
Thanks, Paul. Marcos Esparza. I'm a registered professional engineer in Arizona. I've been working on this project since, a couple of years now. And so we've gone through some hoops, good hoops, with Mr. Kiesler, Mr. Vella, trying to get this to this point. I can speak to the project as a whole or just address what Mr. Oland has focused on right now, which is the right turn lane. The right turn lane was an issue because there are standards for warrants for right turn lanes. The project met the warrant for a right turn lane to start with, so we knew we had to put one in. We also knew that we didn't have the distance that's necessary for a minimum storage length on a 45-mile-an-hour road of 150 feet and a taper length relative to, it's a 15-to-1 ratio, 15 times the width of the lane, which would have been about 180 feet. So 180 plus 15 from where that taper could start is 330 feet. Just didn't have the room with all the constraints. So the town made a great suggestion. Why don't you do a speed study? Let's see what the actual speeds are on the approach where people would actually be tapering off to make that right turn lane. So we did that. We did that in May 18th, and we collected 24 hours worth of speed data. And what's interesting is hearing the previous discussion about the speed data collected at another part of Naranja is that where we collected the data was literally where the taper, as shown on the slide there, kind of meets the tangent area representing the storage lane where that starts. So we actually had our speed data collected at that particular location, and I think you have that in your packet. Also, there's a picture of the location. What we found was there was about 2,790 westbound vehicles that passed that location. The 85th percentile speed, which Mr. Kiesler discussed before, was 31 miles an hour. That was collected all day. That was the 85th percentile speed. There's also a thing called the pace speed, which is the highest 10 mile per hour increment, if you will, of how, you know, what's the most people that are driving within that speed. It's 21 to 30 miles an hour, westbound, heading that direction all day long. So we thought, okay, people aren't driving the 45-mile-an-hour speed. So if they're coming up to that approach to make that turn, they're driving slower. That's something that's more attuned to the standards for a 30-mile-an-hour roadway. The standard minimum distance for a 30-mile-an-hour road is 110 feet for storage and an 8-to-1 ratio for the taper. The 8-to-1 taper would be 96 feet, 8 times 12 feet. Plus 110 feet for the storage length is 206 feet. I actually have it wrong. It's 216 in the report, but if you add it up, like I should have done correctly, it's 206.
The design for this, where the taper starts to where the storage lane ends, is 217 feet. So we exceeded what we believe to be the necessary length for both taper and the storage lane.
Thank you. So the turn lane is now code compliant. That's the punchline. I'll translate engineering into English. The other interesting piece of data that Marcos was probably going to mention until I bumped him off was that only 5 cars were actually exceeding the speed limit out of 2,790 in that 24-hour period. So a very small number. So the other thing I'll just mention real quick is that in addition to pushing this ingress-egress point over much further west, we also added the third lane to allow people to go right or left, and people who might be waiting to go left won't block people who want to go right, which of course is a much easier action. And then lastly, if you'll notice the inbound lane right here, you'll notice that's a little bit wider than all the rest of them. And our civil engineer, Grenier Engineers, he determined that we needed to make it a little bit wider to accommodate the rear wheel drag for fire trucks, delivery trucks, things like that. So we went ahead and made that change too. So it's a nice wide throat, easily traversable. So we've still got all the pedestrian connectivity that we had before. I guess if Bob, you want to talk about the architecture for a second here, I'll erase the screen.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members, my name is Bob Schwartz. I've been a developer and builder for about 25 years. Back in 2011, my family moved here on Naranja, walking distance from the site. And the one thing I noticed shortly after we moved here was this really ugly piece of property at the northwest corner of La Cañada and Naranja. And I couldn't believe that this piece of property existed in the center of town right across from City Hall. When I went to City Hall to inquire about it, I was immediately told that the town called the property the Snake Pit. Nevertheless, I thought that it would be a great community infill project, and lo and behold, the property became available. I purchased it, quickly calculated that I would need about 25,000 cubic yards to fill the craters on the property. So I said that this was going to be a very long-term project. And I patiently waited as materials became available. They did. The LA Fitness project on Hardy produced a lot of material. Anyway, it took me about 7 years to fill this property with enough material to bring it up to where it was supposed to be. I purchased the property in 2011. I've developed and built many projects around Pima County, this being the only one in Oro Valley, and you can see the toll it's taken on me. Just kidding. But we're here. I was successful at filling the property up, and now I'm anxious to start building. We've had many interested people contacting myself or Paul Oland, wanting to know if anything is for lease, anything is available, can we buy it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just very anxious to get moving after working on this property now for 12 years.
And I just wanted to do a little show and tell. I'm a very green builder. The way that I accomplish super efficiency is in the wall systems on these buildings. And a material that I use here is called insulated concrete forms. Probably no one has seen this, but the insulating value of this material for the walls on these buildings is very high, and it's a great building system. The last building that I built on La Cholla Boulevard, just north of River, Arizona Institute of Urology is in there, M3 Mining Engineering. They purchased those buildings, and they were built from this material. And they have since contacted me and told me how incredibly well the air conditioning works, and their electric bills have been cut in half from what they were used to paying. So this is great stuff. Basically, it's stacked like Lego blocks, and you get to about a 10-foot wall, and then all of the steel is placed into these grooves right here. And then you do, with a concrete truck, you do you pump in concrete in 10-foot lifts. You drop a pencil vibrator down into each one of these cells, and the concrete sucks down into it. And then you move on to the next 10 feet or however, whatever your final height is. This is great stuff, and this is how I build. And I am pretty confident that I'll have the most energy efficient buildings in town. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swartz.
If anybody has any questions about this, I've built custom homes out of this and commercial buildings. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So as Bob said, that's it. Happy to answer any questions. We have listened and heard, and I think addressed the comments and concerns and especially suggestions that we've heard here over the last few months and from staff. And I think it's a better product, better design as a result. So thank you for that, and we ask your support.
Thanks, Mr. Olin. There's a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time. I do have a blue card, Mr. Rob Wonsiak. If you would come to the podium, announce your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Good evening. My name is Rob Wonsiak. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I've been here since 1994, and I live directly west and north of development in that Kenyatta Hills area. And I was kind of a little bit disappointed that we didn't hear a little bit more about the traffic control, traffic safety, and pedestrian safety. I hope the council is as enthusiastic about that as they are about building heights and setbacks and screens and things like that. On Naranja Avenue, or Naranja Drive, just across the street from the development, access to the Brugger's Bagels shop, there's a, you can only get into it from coming westbound from Naranja. There's a right turn in and a right turn out. There's no left-hand turns. There's no three lanes of access in and out. And that was, there's a pork chop in there to restrict that flow of traffic. And I assume that was all put there for safety reasons, you know, to limit the in and output and interference of traffic on Naranja. Now you go to the other side, the north side, now all of a sudden all bets are off. We're allowing three lanes of traffic, a right turn out, left turn out, left turn in, right turn in. And I can't see, I mean, just from a common sense standpoint, how that's not going to create a chaos on Naranja Road. Okay, that's one thing. My other disappointment is that the traffic study that was done by Mr. Sparza here had a recommendation, actually, to kind of mitigate that traffic on Naranja, and that was to put a westbound turn lane on Naranja to the westbound turn to the south. That would reduce the queue of traffic wanting to go forward through and also make a left-hand turn, and would reduce the backup of traffic on Naranja. So I'm not seeing anything here with discussion. There's a lot of discussion about the right-hand turn lane into the thing, about extending the lengths and things like that, and that's all great. I'm all for that. And I'm not against the development either. I'm all for the development. I mean, God knows we need another coffee shop and more medical buildings. Maybe we could put a mattress firm in there too. But I would just encourage the council to be a little bit more diligent in terms of understanding and trying to mitigate the safety issues on Naranja. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards for the public hearings. I'm going to close the public hearing. As Mr. Spaeth mentioned, and then also in the staff report, item A must be approved for council to consider items B and C as proposed. I move to approve so this is item A, reconsideration of the 2006 grading exception condition. I move to approve the reconsideration of the grading exception condition for the commercial development subject to the conditions in attachment 1, item A, located at the northwest intersection of Naranja Drive and La Cañada Drive, based on the finding that the request complies with all general plan and zoning code criteria.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. So we'll open it for discussion. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. To the gentleman who spoke earlier, traffic has been an extreme focus of this development and gone through multiple meetings and iterations, and we've all read the traffic reports in depth. And I just want to say I think that the focus here on these traffic issues, as well as the discussions earlier, kind of demonstrate and show how seriously we are trying to take any traffic concerns and the safety of our roadways. And especially, I'm thankful for the lengthening of the right turn lane into this driveway, partly because one of the traffic reports did suggest that this was a higher area of fender bender type of traffic accidents, and that those are probably our kids that are driving to high school. And so I think that these additional safety improvements are worth the time and effort that they took in terms of trying to help our kids. And so I appreciate that. And I did want to ask, since the gentleman mentioned about the right-hand turn lane that was suggested, and if anyone could speak, either the staff or the applicant, as to why that is...
Mayor? I'm really sorry to interrupt, but a point of order. We're on item A. That would be item B right now. So we have a motion for item A, which is just the grading exception, and item B is the conceptual site and landscape plans. So should we be discussing this now, or should we be dealing with the motion that's on the floor?
We should vote A.
Well, I mean, I all along we have discussed the entire property, and there's different requirements for A and B, et cetera. So I just wanted to have an opportunity for the question from the public hearing to be answered before voting.
I think it's fine to let's get an answer to that question, and I appreciate the...
Okay, thank you. I'm just trying to ask that question from the public hearing. Mr. Kiesler, thanks.
Sure. So for the eastbound right turn lane, correct? I don't know if we got a good example or bird's eye view here of both sides. Could you pull it up? Thanks. just to cut right to the chase, the right-of-way width there is very, very narrow. So we would end up needing some right-of-way from the, I'll call it the Brugger's development to the south, also moving all of that equipment. And what would that gain us? So we're looking at the balance sheet of, does that solve a major issue? Yes, it does decrease the amount of time that people wait at that intersection to either go through or to make a right turn. That does separate and makes that better. But the cost of that for the public and how much that actually impacts and creates a better situation. We have an anomaly of accidents that happened, I think, in 2017, where we had a grouping. Otherwise, the normal distribution of the accidents there has been in line with the rest of the streets below that one per million vehicles traveled. So we have not looked at, with or without this development, actually putting in that right turn lane. Because again, looking at the performance of this intersection and looking at the benefit to the taxpayer, what do we gain out of creating that? That's why we haven't done that. And we haven't done a design, but I can with pretty good assurity say that there would need to be some type of a taking of some land in order to make it wide enough to be able to fit everything in there, including signals, utilities, the turn itself, the pedestrian way.
Okay, so the bottom line is we don't own the right-of-way to be able to put in that turn lane currently.
No, I don't believe we have enough.
Okay, thank you. I hope that answers that question. But I also wanted to ask a little bit about moving the lane over and having the left and right turn lanes in the lane in the current site plan as proposed. Do you think by moving that lane over, it'll help people be able to make a left more easily onto Naranja and therefore reduce the U-turns that were occurring?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, certainly everything helps. As we demonstrated when we all met before on this, it does clear after every signal light. But the farther you move it west, the more propensity you're going to have to be able to get out and make that movement. Now, there's certain times of the day where it will be blocked, primarily from the discharge from Ironwood Ridge High School. It's going to be blocked back there a little bit, and you're going to have to wait for the signal to go.
Okay, so let me ask one more follow-up from the public hearing, which is the issue of the pork chop. If we did put a pork chop in this exit, it would cause people who wanted to go eastbound on Naranja to have to make a U-turn, wouldn't it?
That is correct, or go through the neighborhood. Mayor, Vice Mayor, and I can address why one has a pork chop and why one would not have a pork chop. The reason that the, let's call it again, because I'm not familiar with the name of that shopping center, the Brugger's shopping center has that, is because on the westbound traffic, it's downstream. So what we don't want to have happen is on westbound, somebody holding up traffic, trying to make a left turn in. So that pork chop is there to abate that particular situation. You don't have the same thing on the opposite side of the street because you're actually upstream for the traffic movement, if that makes any sense.
It does. Thank you. I hope that answers those questions. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Would it be possible to ask the traffic engineer some questions directly? Thank you for coming up to Oral Valley, Mr. Sparza. I really appreciate it. I recall in my review of this item back in February that there were an alarming number of movements that were level of service F in your analysis. First question I have is, have you had a chance to redo the whole analysis based upon what you've been requested to do recently? Or has the work that you've done recently just been completely independent of that previous analysis and the rest of those numbers pretty much stand as is?
Council Member Bowen, yes, thank you for that question. What's interesting about the intersection, as we know, is that it operates currently with some poor levels of service. There are some high delays during the peak hour, during the commuter peak hours. Not a whole lot has changed since February. What happened is it's going to continue to operate some of the movements at level of service E and F, which is, you want it to be D and better, D, C, B, and A. It doesn't get relatively worse. I'll put it that way. The project includes a coffee shop which has a lot of pass-by trips. There's trips that are already on the road. You know, people who are going to work or to school are going to stop in and get a coffee now at that location. But they're already, it's not adding that many more trips. In fact, in 2025, the build-out for this project represents about 1.4% of the traffic on both Naranja and on La Cañada. So it's already kind of where it's at. It doesn't make that big of a difference in terms of level of service, so it's not, there's nothing to be really mitigated because of the project at this point. So.
And then something I noticed, and I think the public can see this, when you look at the northbound La Cañada left turn
yes.
onto eastbound Naranja, excuse me, westbound Naranja, I've got my east and west.
Right.
You know, I believe that you identified that we have a possible queuing and stacking issue there right now, regardless of whether the coffee shop goes in. The seemed to me like the projected increases in traffic put us in a situation where we might not have enough room in that westbound, north-facing lane to queue up all of the traffic. And I wanted to ask you as an expert in the field, I mean, what happens in situations like that? What happens when your normal traffic is exceeding the queuing capacity of the lane? What type of driver behavior can we possibly expect? And what kind of mitigations do you normally recommend in a situation like that?
Thank you, Council Member Bowen. I've got a couple of takes on that and what we've done in other locations. I may defer to Mr. Kiesler on a potential reason for why it's extended right now into the through lanes. A lot of times what happens is it's currently a situation that, you know, there are some left turns that enter into the through lanes under existing conditions. So the project does add to that. There's a certain amount of feet of storage that would be necessary. And, you know, one of the reasons is I think recently within the last few years, the left turn phase used to be a protected permitted phase, which meant that the left turns could go during the regular through movement green ball. Now it's a protected phase on the northbound and southbound approach, which means that left turners can't make a left turn until legally make a left turn until they get the left turn arrow. That's been a change that's caused some issues. I'm sure it was done because of a safety reason, which is the way to do things, is a reason to do things in the long run. But a lot of times there's, you know, a need to extend that turn lane if it's possible to do so, to take care of that. That's been done in other locations.
Would the analysis that you can do, would that provide that? Can you make recommendations in a situation like that where the queuing length's inadequate, but perhaps a longer phase for the left-hand turn might help that? I was just wondering, you know, now that we're talking about this, and this kind of opened up a can of worms, at least for me, looking at this.
Sure.
Surprised by all the Fs, not necessarily related to the drive-through, but just in the intersection in general. What types of recommendations can you do when, you know, once again, we're kind of constrained on space, and extending the lane might not be feasible?
Right. The consideration to return back to a permitted protected phase for that movement is a consideration. Whether or not that would be acted upon or has already been studied as being, you know, not a good idea because it would then impact the safety of the drivers in the intersection in itself. Yes, timing changes, phasing changes could happen. When we run our analysis, we optimize the conditions given the volume and the timing of the roadway and the cycle length and everything else. So when we hit go for that intersection, it's supposed to produce the best results that are there. And a lot of times, the intersection just doesn't, as a whole, have the capacity to handle all the volume that goes through, and that's just what happens. And so some mitigation, either through timing, through lengthening, you know, construction, hard mitigation, construction and lengthening of the turn lane, you know, is always a consideration, but there's always right-of-way issues. Is it going to get in the way of a opposite direction turn lane also? So a lot of things have to be considered.
Yes, I could see that. I think the public can see that. You can only take it so far south before you start interfering with the other side there.
Right.
Is that correct? It's kind of slithering along like a
snake. You've got kind of a Z, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, so yes, I just wanted to you know, show my appreciation that you came up to explain your numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, show us what our options are. I really appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Sparza.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Just one moment. So I had a question maybe for Mr. Oland. In your report, or it actually was the condition, I believe, the planning and zoning had to do with the drainage area, preserving the vegetation as part of the screening. My question was simply, who's responsible for the maintenance of the drainage channel?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, thank you. So the way it would be the property owner. So for the time being, it would be Mr. Schwartz. You know, there may be a property owners association. So let's say that I'm not sure exactly what his plan is, but if those buildings are condoed out, for example, and people are allowed to own their own little spaces within the overall center, then they would all collectively be responsible. But it won't be the town. That's the point.
Okay, it's not the town. Mr. Kiesler, though, but we would be monitoring.
Mr. Mayor, yes. So part of our responsibilities for our reporting out to ADWR is that we monitor both public and private drainage to make sure it's properly functioning.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Olin. Any other questions? So the motion is to approve item A. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Item B, conceptual site and landscape plans. I move to approve the conceptual site and landscape plans for the commercial development subject to the conditions in attachment 1, item B. Located at the northwest intersection of Naranja Drive and La Cañada Drive, based on the finding that the request complies with the El Conquistador Country Club pad requirements and all applicable zoning code criteria.
Second.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Item C, conceptual architecture. I move to approve the conceptual architecture for the commercial development located at the northwest intersection of Naranja Drive and La Cañada Drive, based on the finding that the request complies with the El Conquistador Country Club PAD requirements and all applicable zoning code criteria.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, Mr. Olin. Thank you, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. And thank you, Mr. Traffic Engineer. I apologize, yeah. I've forgotten your name. Sparza. Esparza. Esparza. Thank you. And we do thank you for coming up. We'll go, Mr. Standish, item 5 of the regular agenda.
Discussion on possible action regarding parking and vehicle storage.
Vice Mayor Barrett and Councilmember Nicholson requested this agenda item. I'll turn the floor over to Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just wanted to explain a little bit about the beginning of where this agenda item came out. When we were looking at the self-storage facility, we learned that there was vehicle storage allowed by right in the code in the commercial districts. And I asked the staff some questions about that and brought it to the agenda for our discussion. And I'd like to start with a motion, and then I can kind of explain a little bit some of that discussion and the motion that I'm going to propose as a proposal. So I move to initiate a zoning code amendment to require a conditional use permit for vehicle storage businesses and parking garages, looking at the following: needed changes to definitions or tables, including differentiating between personal vehicles and vehicles like RVs, boats, and large trucks, implementing a reasonable number of storage spaces to be permitted for an ancillary use, and any other needed changes to facilitate this amendment. So that's my motion.
Second.
Yeah. Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Vice Mayor, would you like to explain your motion?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as part of this, one thing that I learned is that storage vehicle storage facilities, businesses, are actually permitted by right currently in our code in CN, C1, C2, R4, and R4R resort zoning districts. And I kind of feel like a lot of those areas are either residential in nature or they have strategic uses for us in the town, and that if we're going to have vehicle storage businesses, then we should have a conditional use permit required so that we can take a look at them, see if they make sense in that location, if they fit the town's general plan and goals. And similarly with parking garages, I thought it would be a good idea for us to be able to take a look at parking garages and see if they make sense. As part of that discussion with staff, it came out that there's some definitions that would need to be changed, tables, that we don't currently have any thing in our code that makes a difference between an RV or a boat or a truck as we do just a personal vehicle, someone's car. So I thought that that would be kind of useful in terms of what people can park and or store for long periods of time. This is primarily looking at storage, but also parking garage type of things. And then we also discussed how for storage spaces would be allowed as an ancillary use. So, for example, we do have a couple of storage facilities in the town, too, that have RV storage, et cetera, associated with them. And those would make sense as an ancillary use to the main use of self-storage, and I don't think need a CUP for that. But right now, we don't have any limitation as to how many spaces make sense for how many units of storage, et cetera. So I just thought maybe the staff could suggest a reasonable limitation or number that would make sense. And what would happen if we approve this amendment or this motion, all it would do is initiate the zoning code and change. And so then the town staff, as I understand it, would take a look at that, make some suggested changes, bring it to the Planning and Zoning Commission. They would take a look at it, and it would come back to council for us to make any changes or suggestions and for final vote. So this is more to give the direction to just move forward and some goals towards what moving forward would look like.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Councilmember Nicholson, did you want to tag on any?
I don't really need to add anything to that.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
First question for our attorneys. Does this present any problems since these areas are already entitled to this use, apparently, and now we're going to add a conditional use permit? Doesn't that cause difficulty under state statute with changing effectively the zoning of the entitled property?
This motion certainly doesn't, because it just initiates that process. That's something that we could explore while we're looking through this.
Okay, next question. Has any of this, I've been sitting on council and coming to meetings for a long time, and has this ever, I don't ever recall this being an issue whatsoever. Has there been any issues recently? Has there been any issues in the past regarding vehicle storage or parking garages, or any questions regarding those?
If I may, Mayor, members of council, in terms of past applications, the one that Vice Mayor Barrett mentioned, that recent in at Mercado del Rio case where we had two principal uses, one being self-storage and one vehicle storage. Beyond that, we have not had any applications for a vehicle storage facility as a principal use. It's always been an accessory use, like an auto repair. You might have five or six spaces, area where they store vehicles and while they're getting repaired. So hope that helps.
Thank you.
Chief, then Vice Mayor.
Sure. Well, good evening, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon. From just my memory, we have not seen an issue with the storage facilities. Every once in a while, we do get some break-ins, but nothing in regards to parking or storage of items that shouldn't be there.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Okay. I don't know if I'm not an attorney or a town attorney, but I think there was like a 3-year grace period where someone could, and maybe Melanie can correct me too, or anyone on staff, but I think there was like a 3-year grace period, and then after 3 years, it's kind of more or less in effect.
Vice Mayor?
I did ask the, or discuss the legal issues, and I think the thought is the conditional use permit still does allow that use. It just has a process associated with it, and council approval. It doesn't outlaw or prohibit those uses, so it's not a significant change in the fact of what would be allowed. It would give the council discretion to look at each individual site if it would make sense. And I will clarify, you mentioned, you know, that hasn't been a major issue in the past. I agree with that. I don't necessarily see this as something where, you know, we have an immediately pending situation that we need to address that's, you know, strategically important on the strategic agenda, an immediate kind of thing. But just as that came forward, I thought, oh, I don't really feel like that should be the case. I feel like you know, we don't want to get in a situation where someone says, hey, this commercial land that we feel as a council and as a general plan is strategically important, or this residential area that's in a residential area is a good place to create an RV or boat storage facility. I just think it bears us taking a look at that. And similarly with parking garages. So they wouldn't be prohibited. It would just be the process. And if there are any other type of concerns, that's the kind of thing we would look at as we move forward with the zoning code amendment. And I'd love to be able to just simply, you know, move forward and make a quick change. But the way that a zoning code amendment works is it would require a process associated with it. And correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, thank you.
If I may, I might want to add, Mayor, that this code amendment would not be a big lift for staff. This is not a complex issue from our perspective. And secondly, I think the Vice Mayor did identify a gap. It is a gap. It hasn't been an issue in the past, and I think it is a worthwhile project to make sure it doesn't become an issue. So if that helps.
Councilmember Green?
I certainly don't see any harm in studying it and coming forward with some suggestions. I think it's a good idea, actually.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We currently have vehicle storage places in Earl Valley at this time. Is that correct?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. And if I'm understanding correctly, any type of vehicle can be stored in these places?
They have their own regulations.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, so from what I understood from staff, we have currently two storage facilities, Oro Valley Self-Storage that has 90 spaces and Extra Space Storage that has 16, and I think a pending proposal for potentially additional spaces. So those vehicle storage facilities are both associated with a storage facility. So a storage facility requires a conditional use permit, but if you wanted to say just, hey, I've got this lot of land and I want to turn it into RV storage, right now you wouldn't need a conditional use permit because you could just go ahead and do that without having to come back to council for a conditional use permit. So if you wanted attached to a storage facility, it would need the conditional use permit. But if you wanted to just put RVs or other types of vehicles, boats, et cetera, you can go ahead and do that in CN, C1, C2, R4, and R4R.
Mr. Mayor, let me make sure I'm understanding this. Currently, if someone comes and they want a vehicle storage building, this will allow us to have a conditional use permit for what kind of vehicle storage will be allowed at this business?
Or whether they can put one on that property. Right? Maybe Mr.
Or whether a particular property can be designated for vehicle storage use.
I think a little bit of the confusion, if I may back up, is that what we have today are self-storage facilities. Okay, think purely, this is where I'm parking my stuff, not a car, not a vehicle, as the primary use. The accessory use in two of our self-storage facilities in the Nore Valley is also the ability to park vehicles, RVs, could be a boat, could be a trailer. It's a vehicle is a very broad term. And so right now, Nore Valley's got two facilities where primary use, self-storage, accessory use, you can park different vehicles, very broad array. The issue that's been identified in the code is that, let's take a vacant piece of property. Someone wants to do just vehicle storage. That's it. They just want a big yard to store boats. Okay, that would be a permitted use. And so what the vice mayor is proposing is to make that a conditional use. So council would have a chance to review it, decide whether the location is appropriate, the screening is sufficient, check in with the neighbors, that sort of thing. So hopefully that helps clarify.
Thank you, Mr. Vella. That helps.
Other questions? Okay, seeing none, there's a motion on the table. It's been seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Future agenda items for September or beyond. I move to adjourn.
Seconded
by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes 7-0. Council, enjoy your August break.